the football around there a little bit.
Yes, we did. I forget why they – Brian Truda is a voice that people may know of if they listen around town, and he does a lot of Chiefs work as well.
Yeah, he does the PA for the Chiefs.
The one that goes out over the stadium?
Yes.
Yes, so that's Brian Truda. Great guy. He still does morning radio. Mm-hmm. And anyway, Brian Truda was a young man, and so I threw him a pass. And it was so funny because I said, all you got to do is just, go up 10, 12 yards, turn around. Just turn around and look and make it simple. And I stuck it right in his chest. One of those, they put a cross in there, I was like so happy he caught it. I was going like, he's going, pointing at his chest. yeah, I got it. But,
I hit him right in the chest.
And it's so much fun when I go out to Arrowhead. I don't make it out that often. Usually one game a year or something, I try to make it out to Arrowhead. And one of the joys is seeing Brian Truda out there at the game. So I remember throwing a ball out there. I know with you it would have been a deep route, though. I mean, you would run around a post.
I remember for one of the turkey bowls we were warming up before the game, and I got blindsided by a priest. We were practicing at two different ends of the field, and we flattened each other.
You're looking back at your guy throwing in the opposite directions.
Yes, exactly.
I remember that. Yeah, I remember you. Whoa.
Yeah, I got knocked right. Ian didn't even
I wasn't close enough to you.
Didn't even know who it was.
Did you say a cuss word at that time, or did you just say,
No, I didn't say anything. And I just
Catch the ball? Danny, did you hold on to it?
I don't think I was. The ball was to me yet.
Okay.
I don't think it was actually to me yet. So that's Dan Weber. I'm Danny Klinkscale. We do this show, obviously, weekly here on Sports Radio 810.
20 years.
20 years worth. We also do a podcast at DannyKlinkscale.com, which comes your way on Monday, starting Monday evenings.
Is that 2 years?
Tuesday, and that's 2 years for that. So we're 18 years behind on that. We'll have Sherman Taylor, former Oklahoma player and father of Zach Taylor.
Sherwood.
Sherwood Taylor.
Yeah.
I thought I said Sherwood, but I guess I said Sherman. Zach Meyer, Zach Taylor, the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals, and he also has...
And Press Taylor.
Press Taylor, the Eagles quarterback coach, are his sons as well, so... Quarterback tree. We'll talk a little Oklahoma, Texas football. That is an 11 o'clock game, and you can hear it right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I was watching Reese Davis today on the television college football game day, and I had a moment of broadcasting synergy with him because whenever you say the title of the Oklahoma, Texas game, you have to slow down. And he did, and he said Red River Rivalry because it is extremely hard to say. It is probably one of the hardest things in broadcasting to say outside of Detroit Red Wings. Try to say Detroit Red Wings when you're doing hockey scores fast at the end of a sportscast without going Detroit Red Wings. So Red River Rivalry comes up.
Oh, nowadays you can
o'clock.
Go just the Wings.
Yes, here on Sports Radio.
St. Louis Cardinals are playing baseball at the Cards.
Cards, yes. But Detroit Red Wings is another one. Through the years.
That well, Danny. You're such a pro.
Well, and I did it just like he did it, because I know that
Red River
you have
rivalry.
To slow down and make sure you say it properly. So that's an 11 o'clock game. There are
what tradition that game has, though? I mean, I cannot wait to see it.
11 o'clock kicks, and one of the highlights will be them, I'm sure, highlighting whatever the wackiest food is that is deep fried and served at the Texas State Fair. The one I don't get is the deep fried butter. They actually serve deep fried butter. I mean, can you imagine just eating they do Oreos and all kinds of other stuff, but man, anyway, I guess people just want to induce a heart attack. Let's talk about some of the 11 o'clock games beside Oklahoma, Texas, and we'll visit on that game with Sherwood Taylor coming up. South Carolina plays at number 3 Georgia. That probably is not going to be a competitive game. Many people think Georgia's the best team in the country. Do you think they are the equal or better than Alabama?
I think the word equal is a fair possibility. It's going to be how they play right down the stretch, because I do think that the separation from the Big Two, and that's what you, when you look at college football, it's being a little bit overwhelmed the last 5 years. I think we're losing a little bit of the joy and celebration, anticipation. This college football playoff could be a bigger deal if it weren't so often Clemson and Alabama
right.
as the two best teams. So to get to your questions this year, it looks like those two teams aren't quite as far away from some of the others. The Ohio States of the world are in there. Georgia, you know, there are some teams that look like down after down can compete. We'll see if that changes. If the aura of the big game is too much, and that's where I'd lean still, to Alabama and to Clemson, but I do think it's more in play. I don't think those teams are just in cruise control and waiting for the playoff. I could see where that would happen. I think it's a challenge for us as Chiefs fans around here to say just advance us to the playoffs or the championship game against New England and not enjoy, play out the regular season, get better and all those things, and that could easily happen with Alabama and with Clemson. So I do think Georgia's closer. But it's not as if they have a flawless team, that it's their best team the last few years. But I do mention the college football playoff because when we get on this subject, Danny, every year, I'm there to say it is way better than it used to be when there's only two teams that played in a championship game. It's even more better than when we just used to vote and see who the champion was. But still, so much of our focus and time is spent on the negativity of you have four teams make it and you have five major conferences. But the Pac-12 is turning into such a dud that you almost don't think it's disrespectful to not include them year after year after year. I think this will be the third year. Washington might have been in it 2 years ago. But the Pac-12 has been left out, and it hasn't been as painful. But we're missing out on the celebration of talking about how great it is, how exciting it is, what it's like, because it just is Clemson and Alabama too much. So I think maybe those two teams will be in the playoff again, but at least the semifinal games are going to be more intriguing. Last year, we have a lot of Notre Dame fans around here, but I could not get fired up to think that Notre Dame was going to compete in the Cotton Bowl against Clemson. And, you know, Notre Dame fans say, go watch the tape, it was closer. But because you had that preconceived notion that Clemson was going to pull away, it seems like it was 100-0 and never in doubt. So I hope that Georgia is better. I hope some of these teams can give Alabama a little bit of a struggle and compete with Clemson. Because Clemson's in a conference where one division is so bad that even last night another team went down. Miami beat Virginia.
In a rather dreadful game also.
Yeah, it was at Miami. And at Miami, the thing this week at the games on Thursday and Friday that are interesting is the home teams were wearing the light-colored uniforms. Miami was wearing all white. Seemed like it was a little bit of a trend. LSU, they play a big game against Florida.
They always wear
white at home, yep. Like the Dallas Cowboys always wear white at home. But this was a little different. And Miami, like a boxer who took haymakers and somehow stood up and won the battle, Virginia was in their territory so much of the game and ended up with so few points. I think they ended up with 9.
Yes.
Virginia loses 17-9 against Miami, and they were in scoring position tons of times. But again, we have come on this show Saturday mornings, Danny, with Friday night football affecting things dramatically. We've seen ranked teams get beat. We saw a crazy game like Kansas going on the road and beating Boston College, doubling them up. But again, here's another team. That ACC division, is it the Coastal, that Clemson's going to have to play against in a championship game, is just worthless. So Clemson better stay on cue and win their games, because they're going to get no love on championship game Saturday of saying we beat a nobody team, a team with, you know, X number of losses, too many. They will not get the benefit of the doubt. Now, because they're Clemson, I think they'll get the benefit of the doubt and be in the playoff. But that ACC is all about Clemson. And today they play Florida State. And you want to say, wow, say those words again, Florida State, Clemson? How much fun is that game traditionally? Usually Florida State's the power and Clemson's trying to overcome them. And now we're looking at such a disappointing team. Will Florida State step up with the athletes they have, like Miami stepped up last night, with the athletes they have, and play better? I do not expect it. Trevor Lawrence is a big story. How good is the quarterback from Clemson? Just because they say you're great, Danny, over a half year as a freshman, doesn't mean you are and that it's easy. And he's played well, but he has not played at a dominant level for Clemson. Let's see how he plays today against an athletic Florida State team.
Bullet points on the other top 25 games. Michigan has been considered a disappointment under Jim Harbaugh because they can't beat Ohio State, but basically they beat everybody else, and they play at Illinois today. Number 23, Memphis, plays at Temple. Temple has really carved out a fine program, and they continue to develop coaches that go elsewhere and thrive, and then they replace him, and they're still good, and it's kind of an amazing story. They already beat Maryland when they were ranked this year. They take on a Memphis team that's undefeated. But Matt Rhule, all these other coaches go on and do great things at
Al
at
Golden,
Temple.
I mean, you've got a lot of guys who've rolled through there.
Right. It is pretty amazing. Alabama plays at Texas A&M, and Jimbo Fisher, who took some harsh words from Will Harris on Seren's show this week, saying he'll never take Texas A&M to the heights that they want to be. And Texas A&M fancies themselves. They think they should be Georgia. They do think they should be Georgia, and yet
and definitely LSU right there in their division.
Right, and they never quite get to that point. They are ranked right now, but nobody expects them to be competitive against Alabama today.
You don't, and the game is at Alabama, I believe.
No, it's at Texas A&M.
So it's at Texas A&M. Okay, yeah, so that makes it a little more competitive. Because you think of a few years ago, Jimbo Fisher was not the coach, but Texas A&M fought Alabama for a good long time before they pulled away in the fourth quarter. And as a fan of college football, I hope that happens today. A&M's a dangerous team. I don't think they're consistent enough under Jimbo Fisher. I don't think that they are at LSU's level because they find games that they can't get over the hump. But today's at least a dangerous game for Alabama, and you got to look hard on the schedule to find where Alabama and Clemson are in games that really matter. So I have some outside hope that, you know, that CBS game that you want to think is the best of college football, but a lot of times – it's enough of a mismatch that it's not must-see TV. I don't know how often you get stuck on CBS versus ABC or ESPN or FS1. All the games going on at 2:30. I mean, how often are you just locked in, Danny, and saying this SEC game is unbelievable? I think it's pretty rare.
I almost forget that the college football is on CBS sometimes.
Yeah, and you got Gary Danielson, who may be the best college analyst and one of the best broadcasters that we have. So it's a big-time game. We'll see if it can be today. I'm hopeful. I don't think A&M's going to win, but I do think we'll learn a little bit about Alabama. This whole equation of how good are Alabama and Clemson still to be answered. Today might help us a little bit learn about Alabama.
Wisconsin's home against Michigan State, a team that rises up occasionally, then disappoints occasionally. This year on the other side of it, two losses already this year. Wisconsin undefeated.
I like
and
Wisconsin.
Surprising, and you know we've talked on this show about the likability of Wisconsin, and they always seem to have a great running back these days, and they do again with Jonathan Taylor, and they're just an impressive team, and they don't play sexy football, but they win a lot.
And Michigan State is the same type of ilk, so it's one of those games where it could be just an even battle, and Wisconsin can't afford that right now. They need to look like the better team and start opening up our minds and the voters around the country. The College Football Playoff Committee is going to be getting together here soon, Danny, and starting putting out rankings. And this is the kind of game where they're better than Michigan State this year. But you might turn on the television in the late third quarter and say, well, these two teams are playing much alike. Michigan State's strong on defense. It's a little battle. What's going to happen? And you got also a Heisman race. Who is going to win the Heisman? Is Jalen Hurts really going to run away? That performance last week against Kansas did not look like a dominant Heisman Trophy performance that we've seen out of the previous two Oklahoma quarterbacks. Now, that could be fixed today with a big win over Texas, but I think the Heisman Trophy race is opening itself back up a little bit, Herbert. For Oregon last night, put on a show again. And because they're on the West Coast and they're somewhat, for us, forgotten, I talked about the Pac-12 not being as big a deal. It's important for Taylor to get after it, running the ball. I think Wisconsin will win, but they need to show well.
And we have time for one other game, and it is a big one. A game that Saturday night football at LSU almost made me want to go to LSU when I was young. they played the Saturday night
Tiger
game,
bait,
and
it was Tiger bait.
And so
Tiger bait.
Florida has been a very unsexy football team, to use that phrase again, for the last few years. They've been a defense-dominated team. When it comes to a big game, they haven't quite been there, but they are undefeated again. This is a battle of undefeateds. LSU is the better team, as indicated by the two-touchdown spread in the game. But Dan Mullen and Florida, do they have anything for LSU?
Well, there's no team that's been easier to disrespect than the Gators this year. And guilty, raise my hand up right here. I've been talking about, well, I'm not sold on Florida. And then they have a quarterback injury, and things look a little bit worse. But man, they looked good against Auburn last week, and they are good on defense. I just don't think that they're ready for LSU.
And LSU's so different now. They brought in a new offensive coordinator and quarterback coach, and they're just lighting it up in a way that LSU football fans have never seen.
Right. Quarterback records are being broken right and left. We talked about the Heisman race. It's still in play.
Yeah, by performance,
as well.
Joe Burrow probably should be the Heisman Trophy winner right now.
They're scoring over 50 points a game on average and throwing the ball all over the yard with, hey, you recognize some NFL receivers from LSU? They have guys.
Always
and still do. And now they're opening it up. Burrow's delivering the football. And they're going against a Florida defense that I think's given up less than 60 points all year. All year combined. So it's going to see, you know, what's going to break, the offense or the defense. I give an edge to LSU, not only because it's at home. I shouldn't do this, but I'm going to be skeptical about Florida one more week. But not so much because I'm down on the Gators as much as I'm high on LSU, opening things up the way they are. And I know we're going to get ready to move on and talk to Sherwood Taylor and talk about Oklahoma and Texas and some of that, Danny, but there's a lot of good games today.
There are a lot of good games on
the slate. For instance, locals, we'll call it locals. Nebraska at Minnesota is an intriguing ball game. Nebraska got out barely last week in a win, and now they're going on a road to a Minnesota team that seems to be overachieving every week. That's going to be an exciting game this afternoon. And there are others. How about Penn State and Iowa? We are not going to talk about it much now, but Danny, Iowa's bringing out some new unis today.
Like, that's
all
unusual.
Gold.
That sounds dreadful.
I have to ask about the helmet. I think it's still the Iowa traditional helmet.
Let's hope. I don't.
This is a good day of college football, but it doesn't get any better than Oklahoma, Texas.
And we didn't even mention USC Notre Dame, a traditional battle,
yeah,
but has lost some of its luster the last few years, so Notre Dame expected to win that one. Lots of great football. We'll talk about one of the big ones, Oklahoma, Texas, coming up next with former Oklahoma player and coaching tree. He's the trunk of the tree.
His sons had advanced further than he ever thought about going.
I wove myself into a literal foxhole there.
Detroit Red Wings.
Sherwood Taylor comes your way next, talking Oklahoma, Texas, right here on College Game Day. Welcome back to College Football Game Day right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stan Weber across from me. I'm Danny Klinkscale, joined now by Sherwood Taylor. Sooner in the 70s, football coach, and now breeding football coaches like Topsy, as one of his sons is the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals, another the quarterback coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. Sherwood, welcome to the program. Glad to have you.
Glad to be here.
Sherwood, great to talk to you. You don't just accidentally have children who coach. You've been around football a long time as an Oklahoma football player, and then into coaching. Why don't you just give us a quick little rundown and summary for those listeners who aren't as familiar, and a reminder to people like me, we've had you on the show before, about when you played and what you did in coaching, and then what influence that had on your boys taking up that industry.
Well, I started playing at OU in 1977, 78, and 79 were the 3 years I played there. I stayed there and coached for 4 years, and then I went to Kansas State, where Stan and I hooked up. Coached at K-State for 2 years. Retired and started raising my kids. I have 4 kids, 2 boys, 2 girls. The 2 boys, one, Zach played at Nebraska, Press played at Marshall, and then they got into coaching from there. How, I don't ever know, because I never steered them that direction, but ended up coaching, and they've been quite successful so far. So that's kind of where it all started and ended.
Let me ask you about you being a Sooner, and then your son goes to Nebraska. I mean, that just sounds like heresy.
No, a lot of my friends thought that, but I thought, my wife and I thought it was the greatest experience he could ever have, because Nebraska fans, as you know, are probably the greatest fans, college fans, sometimes ridiculously so, but because they would cheer teams after they lost, and I never could understand that, but it was a perfect experience for Zach, and it fit in. It couldn't have turned out better for him to go to Nebraska.
Because did he start at Wake Forest?
He started out at Wake Forest, was there, redshirted, played a little bit his redshirt freshman year. The OC left to go to Air Force. And he said, I don't think I can run this offense, which he never would have because it was a run-oriented offense. He transferred, went to Butler County Junior College, was successful there, and then went on to Nebraska from there.
And was the Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year. So he gets into coaching, and he's not the only son. Your son, Press, also is in coaching. And so you talk about they choose that industry. And, by the way, my son has decided to do that as well. Stanton's at K-State. And it's not as if I said this is what you need to do because there are a lot of ups and downs. There's a lot of work. There's a lot of stress. And your family time's compromised, and both your boys have children. So you're a grandparent there at least and maybe with the girls. But take us through a little bit before we get to Oklahoma versus Texas, which is so much fun. Your son is one of 32 coaches, head coaches, in the NFL. What was it like experiencing the Rams last year, and then now with the Cincinnati Bengals, having your son as a head coach? I've watched my kids play. I've broadcast where my kids play, so I know all about that emotion. But what about this coaching at the highest level and being the parent watching it unfold?
It's been remarkable. We were fortunate enough that Zach was with the Rams last year as the quarterback coach, and they went to the Super Bowl. We got to go to that game. The next morning we wake up and the Cincinnati Bengals have their plane. Flew us to Cincinnati. We did his press conference. And during the press conference, my wife and I looked at each other and go, isn't he just 12 years old still? And it was remarkable to think that he was 36 and being a head coach of the NFL team. We still go to games and they're talking about Zach Taylor. We go, who are they talking about? Because it's just hard to imagine that age already being at the level he's at.
What do you think it is like stepping in as a coach to he's obviously a young coach who has designs on, you know, doing this for a long time, and that's a difficult situation. The Bengals have never been the easiest organization to be a coach for, and they're seen as rather notoriously underspending, and they're kind of in a transition period, and they have a quarterback that people aren't that sure about. That's a challenging job he's got in his hands right now.
Well, he had opportunities to learn from a lot of different people, and plus he was at Wake Forest before Wake Forest was very good, so he saw a sparse crowd for his first year of college, but he's been preparing for a long time. He was fortunate. His wife's father is Mike Sherman, who was head coach of the Green Bay Packers,
right.
Coached different places, so he has someone to bounce ideas off of. Bill Callahan was his coach in Nebraska. He's had lots of people that he's been able to visit with, and all the time he was growing up, we talked about football and sports all the time. So he's really been preparing for this opportunity since he's probably 9 or 10 years old.
Mike Sherman was the head coach at Texas A&M. We talk about a big game today, Alabama at Texas A&M, and what could happen there with Jimbo Fisher as the head coach. You mentioned Bill Callahan. Guys, he's the new head coach of the Washington Redskins.
Yeah. That's right.
As of this week. As he steps in as the interim head coach. So the world becomes so small. And,
go back. Well, in fact, Brian, his son, is the offensive coordinator for the Bengals.
Right.
Really?
Yes, that's right.
I had not put that one together. There are so many things going on, and it's such a small world, and you have an inside look at it, but you've also had great experience of younger coaches, what it takes. You've been around when football was played at a high level, a dominant level at Oklahoma with Barry Switzer, and yet it was done with a different style. What are the continuity items? What is true today that was true back with a Barry Switzer about being a successful coach, especially younger coaches like your sons are and some of the ones in the NFL now that are getting things done? What's the same and what's different from what you saw back in the old days when football seemed to be played totally differently?
Well, it's still about execution, and it's about the culture that you develop within your program. That was the thing that was unique about OU. We never, ever played in a game, nor did I coach in a game that I ever believed I was going to lose. I mean, that was just the culture. It was the statement was, we didn't lose, we just ran out of time. and that's what it takes to be successful, to have that type of culture. And just a willingness to buy into what you're running as a system. I mean, we ran the wishbone, where the receivers would do cartwheels if they called a pass play. My roommate was Steve Rhodes. He caught 12 passes in a season, was the leading receiver for our team. So in that aspect of it, it's changed a lot, but it still comes down to the culture and execution.
Wasn't Tinker Owens an Oklahoma receiver?
Yes, he was.
He was an All-American, and I don't think he caught 10 passes ever in one season.
Yeah, isn't that amazing that I could?
Nine were for touchdowns.
Yeah, the post pattern after the fake, and Oklahoma touchdown.
Well, I know.
That's why when I remember Tinker Owens.
When you ran the wishbone, I mean, guys would end up being flat. Open. I remember when Kansas ran it, and Nolan Cromwell was the quarterback, and he couldn't throw a lick. But still, there were guys would be running wide open 30 yards down the field on play action because you ran the ball down after down.
Well,
after
I played
down.
Free safety a little bit, and I know the stress you have with the wishbone. We talked about run fits, Coach. We talked about how safeties get involved in run fits. You definitely did in the wishbone. You're supposed to be up at the line of scrimmage. But can you talk a little bit about that responsibility that the defensive players have in these wide open, when things are wide open like they are now, and then they run the football, everyone's got to be involved. You're an old defensive back, and you know a lot about what's being coached in the past and now. What's it like having that responsibility being 10, 12, 15 yards off the ball and still needing to be at the line of scrimmage if a running play occurs?
Well, it just requires a great pre-snap responsibility on your part to look at where your weakness is before the snap, and then once the ball snapped, what is taking place in your area. What happens a lot of times, players, the great players, think they can make a play everywhere, and they don't really honor the responsibility where gap responsibility or area of the field to cover. And just for that quick second, they're looking the wrong way, and the guy's right by them for a touchdown. With the speed of today and the accuracy that the quarterbacks can throw the ball with, it's much different than when we played back in the 70s.
Give us a couple of your memories of the Red River rivalry game from your days.
Well, the 3 years I played, my sophomore year was Earl Campbell's was his senior year, the year that he won the Heisman. That was the first year he ran for 100 yards against Oklahoma. Before the game, the defensive backs had all kind of made a pledge that if one of us hits him, all four of us better be there because he'll kill one of us. Earl was just a freak of nature. He had 38-inch thighs. If you can imagine, some people, that's their waist. That was each thigh for Earl. So that was my first memory, was being terrified of having to tackle Earl Campbell by myself. And it just the game itself, half of the stadium is for one team and half for the other. It's being held during the largest state fair in the country. You just can't really get a better atmosphere for a college football game. And in the 70s, when we played, both of us were usually in the top five when the game came around.
What's it like? It's still today, and you experienced it at the Cotton Bowl. The ramp that the teams walk down is the same for both teams. It's not like everyone wants to start a fight, but it is still unique. If you go out early to do a little warming up, those kind of things, that doesn't happen much in football nowadays.
No, and a lot of the players know each other quite well from high school. A lot of our players at OU were Texas high school grads, and so they knew the players. It wasn't like you're just another university. They were quite familiar with the other players on the other team, and it just the people that you need in Dallas, I mean, back and forth, it just became a bigger and bigger issue and just made it probably what I consider the top college football game in the country.
Do you attend it every so often or every?
My wife would love to go. She loves the social part of it. She sees all of her old friends. I'm very lazy. I went back in the days where the bus took me up to the gate, dropped me off by the locker room, and I got on the bus after the game and left. I'm not very good at finding the parking spot and walking 20 minutes to the stadium to sit with everybody else, but that's kind of what I'm reduced to. That's why I go to my son's games. They give me better tickets.
And you get to go to a place like Philadelphia and around the country. Sherwood Taylor is our guest, an Oklahoma football player in his 70s, a coach at Oklahoma. Was with me at Kansas State, coached a couple of years there. Not me as a position because I'd already switched to quarterback at that time, but his sons are big-time NFL coaches, including Zach, the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals. And we're talking about the Red River rivalry, a giant game. My whole life, this has been a big deal. And I want to know a little bit about behind the scenes because I am on those buses. I'm so lucky when I'm at K-State games for the last 33 years. On game day, they can say, did you do this? Did you go to this restaurant? Did you see this? Well, no. I rode to the bus, and they dropped me off right there. and I see the inside of what's going on, but not the outside. I have to ask you, though, being around it, what is it like the night before and that bus ride and things like that? Because it has to be, I assume, a little bit different, that there are more people around the hotel, or is it just another game until you arrive at the stadium? What's the difference, this game versus other games?
When I played the whole week of the game, they played the Texas fight song the whole time we were practicing. By Saturday, you were willing to kill anybody that turned on the Texas fight song, because we'd listened to the thing at full blast over and over and over. I mean, it just drove you crazy. And then the night before, we stayed in Fort Worth because it was so wild in downtown Dallas on Commerce Street that we had to stay as far away as we could from what was going on so that we wouldn't be involved with it. We would get to watch the news, and that was about the extent of our involvement with it. So the time you got to the stadium to play, and the bus pulls off the highway, goes in through the fairgrounds to the parking spot, and there's people yelling at you, cussing at you, horns up, horns down. It's just an atmosphere that you can't even imagine.
Now, to give you an example of what tonight's like at LSU, okay, I'm just, for the listeners, a little ways away from Oklahoma, Texas, just to show you that LSU at night is the greatest place I hear about and the greatest place I've ever been. They treated K-State that way on the opening game of the season when we played them. I mean, now there were no horns up and horns down. There was no one rooting for us. But the abuse that we took on that bus just going to the stadium, my jaw was dropped. I was going, wow, college football is a lot different than high school. But it actually was LSU. LSU was a lot different. Okay, you're a player for OU or Texas. You got this big game. It is so important. You know about it all week long. Does it ever turn into just you're out there in that daze you get into concentrating on your assignments and playing football? Do you at some point in the game and it really is just a football game?
Well, it is, in that when the game starts, you're playing, you don't really pay attention to what your opponent's wearing. You're trying to execute, and if you're on defense, trying to read what they're doing on offense. So that part of it becomes the same as every other game. But the consequences of winning and losing, we lost my sophomore year and my senior year. We lost 13-7, and that cost us the national championship. The 3 years I played at OU, 32-4, never won the national championship. So the losing that game early in the year, always, you seldom made it all the way back to number one if you started out there. So the consequences of playing that game for us in the 70s was quite great.
So you lock into the game. I could see that. I expected that. But when the game ends and you win, it has to seem somewhat like a playoff game in the NFL or a bowl win. I mean, it has to change right when the game's over or you know your team's going to win. That's usually the last play of the game in Oklahoma versus Texas. The joy, the difference of that game compared to other wins.
Well, the great thing is when we won against Texas, we didn't have to go to school or practice on Monday. So Coach Switzer, that was incentive in itself. To win the game. So that was a big deal. But we usually had a little bit of a setback the next week. Whoever we played, we were still celebrating over having beaten Texas. So didn't always have the greatest of circumstances the next week, but usually we won and overcame that. But it took us a while to get over the Texas hump.
Sherwood, we really appreciate you taking the time and give us some insights on today's Red River rivalry and getting the importance of it that we know, but firsthand knowledge of it. It's been great.
Thank you, Stan. I appreciate it.
And best of luck to your kids. It's been fun to watch them grow up before our eyes.
No, it's fun. I hopefully they'll continue to be successful and we'll get to watch them for a long time.
Well, they have great parents. I know Sherwood's wife as well. So thanks, Sherwood.
Sherwood Taylor, former Oklahoma player and the father of Zach Taylor, the coach of the Cincinnati Bengals, and Press Taylor, the Eagles quarterback coach as well. A coaching tree right there from the old coach in Oklahoma Sooner.
Welcome Welcome back to College Football Game Day right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We'll take you to the top of the hour when it's time for Oklahoma-Texas. We got some historical perspective on the Oklahoma-Texas series with Sherwood Taylor. Let's talk about the game itself today, Stan, and check out a couple of the other Big 12 games. There are four teams off today in the Big 12, including Kansas and Kansas State. Oklahoma has been, I'd say, very impressive this year. Until last week against Kansas, they seemed a little sleepwalkish, but it was a bit understandable. It was an 11 o'clock kick, and then it didn't kick at 11 o'clock because there was a weather delay, and so to further sort of mute the emotions. But eventually they kicked things into gear, scored six straight touchdowns, and won the game handily. They are a fairly significant favorite in this game today in the neutral setting in Dallas. And what kind of game do you expect?
Well, what is Oklahoma? First of all, I expect a close game because I think Texas is for real and right on the heels of Oklahoma. I still think Oklahoma, after nine games, will be in first place in the Big 12. But this game is always competitive, and now it's not just because, oh, throw out the records, it's a rivalry. I think Texas has grown up. Sam Ehlinger is a big-time winner at quarterback, is what you need to make plays. I think Texas is more consistent, and last year they whipped Georgia. They beat Oklahoma in the regular season, and they were in a championship game. So this is really, like Sherwood Taylor talked about, where both teams can talk about being great. But we're looking at a line, basically, of Oklahoma being a double-digit favorite. So when you step back from that perspective, and Vegas really understands how things are going, Oklahoma seems to be a big favorite. But we need to learn something about Oklahoma, not just because we watched them play Kansas up close and personal. It's hard for them to be motivated in that game. You can't use that against them. But you could say, what has Oklahoma done for you this year, Danny? They beat Houston, South Dakota, at UCLA, which is one of the worst teams in FBS, really. An easy win on the road, Texas Tech at Kansas. Where have they been tested? Now, Jalen Hurts won big time and was the SEC Offensive Player of the Year at Alabama. We've seen the coaching at Oklahoma put two separate guys as Heisman Trophy winners the last 2 years, and you think that Jalen Hurts might be on his way again. And it looks to me like the defense is more sound. So there's no reason to be bashing Oklahoma right now, but you heard what I just read. I don't know that they've been tested yet. Let's look at Texas. Texas would be ranked in the top five in the country if they would have been able to win a close game against LSU. Boy, how much are we jumping on the LSU bandwagon around the country and talking about what they can do? Burrow offensively lit it up, but Texas stayed right with them, and that is the only game that they lost this year. So the Longhorns may be a little bit better, and Oklahoma may not be quite as good. We'll see today. I expect it to be close. I'm going to put the edge to Oklahoma, but my edge to Oklahoma is more over nine conference games. I think that they'll be more consistent, and Texas is more reachable. Like West Virginia stood up to them fairly well. But on any given day, the physicality of Texas has got to show. And how much is Tom Herman bringing that out? That's my question. It appears he's getting it done. He wants to play with the physical style and utilize the big guys up front. When Texas is at their best, it's not only Vince Young running for a national championship runs and Colt McCoy playing at a high level. Danny, it was as much about the big guys up front that they recruited that look like the most beautiful football players in the world, really dominating. And Texas has shown hints in the last year or so that those guys are starting to up their game. Derek Johnson, Kansas City Chiefs linebacker, I remember when we said, well, I did a show on Metro Sports, and they said, well, who would you hope the Chiefs draft? And I go, well, they're never going to get Johnson, but he's the guy that I would love to see become a Chief. Well, look how good he was. That's the kind of players they had at Texas. Not only thoroughbred looking, but actually in production. And Texas might be ready to take that step. Let's see if they are today. I expect a close game, slight edge to Oklahoma, but it's going to be a lot about Jalen Hurts. How well does he play? Because I think Sam Ehlinger, you know, I like doing the one team's predictable and the other team's more variable. To me, Ehlinger is more predictable. He's not going to have 400 yards passing. He's going to make winning plays. But if Jalen Hurts is just flat out better and the Heisman Trophy winner, then he'll go win the game for Oklahoma.
Hurts leading Oklahoma not only in passing but rushing so far this year also. Texas Tech plays at Baylor. Baylor's cracked the rankings as the win over Kansas State has, among other things, has propelled them to the number 22 slot. Texas Tech, a little difficult to judge, have had their moments. Baylor's a 10.5-point favorite in this game. I think this is, we're going to say this a bunch of times in the Big 12 this year, and we're going to say it about the other game in the Big 12 this week, as a matter of fact, that we'll get to in a moment. Each game sort of redefines the teams.
Absolutely. And you need confirmation. You play well one week, and you need to back it up. I thought Oklahoma State did a very nice job beating K-State, and then they did not show up for the first half. And Texas Tech jumped all over them and maybe surprised them. And now Texas Tech looks like, well, if they back that performance up, then who's talking about OSU being a better team than them? Just substitute our name in there. But Texas Tech's looking at a Baylor team that has a real opportunity to start a season 6-0 when they won only one game 2 years ago, and they got a quarterback in Charlie Brewer who is – it's not too big for him. With his dad being a Texas quarterback, he's very calm. He's grown up a lot like Drew Locke, growing up at Missouri, turning into just a fine, big-time quarterback. We may be seeing that right before our eyes, but they need confirmation. Yeah, you beat Iowa State. That was excellent. But that was your coming out party. No one really was looking at them because they played the worst non-conference schedule of any FBS team. So, okay, yeah, you won against Iowa State, and you made some plays. But then you go up and do it against Kansas State, look like the better team, and now you're the favorite. Can you win when you're the favorite? So today we'll define. If Baylor can go out and be the favorite and be the hunted, and Matt Rhule can take on a new role of we're not just fighting Baylor and improving and getting rid of Art Briles' style, we're actually a favorite and can go win. That's at stake today. But I think Texas Tech's dangerous. But who shows up? These 20-year-old kids are showing some variability. Because while I keep saying, Danny, man, this conference is so competitive, we would turn on the game, and at halftime, one team's way ahead. But then the next week, it switches. I don't like that. I'd rather every game be 17 to 14 or 21-20 at the half and go, this is fun. Instead, we go, wow, look how great Texas Tech played. So I hope it doesn't unfold that way. But again, a real defining day between these two teams.
And Iowa State, they had the accolades before the season began, and it's been somewhat sketchy and uneven for them so far. Tight loss to Baylor kind of has redefined where they're at. They would be considered just fine if they had won that game, but they didn't. And they play against West Virginia. They're a pretty significant favorite in this game. They would be the Big 12's biggest disappointment if they don't win today.
Yep, because everyone just handed them third. I mean, there's pressure on Texas to be the second, and I thought, yeah, it's not so easy for them to separate, but I think Texas has established themselves as the second-best team. Iowa State was the team I had a total focus on, the spotlight on, of that's not easy. When everyone says, you're good, you're better than the pack, and I look around, I go, the pack's not much different than you, and it is completely different to be a favorite and act like it's going to be easy. 1978, Danny, was the last time Iowa State, before this year, was ranked in the preseason polls. It's a little different for them. And it's not been easy, and today's not an easy day either because West Virginia is all over the board. They can play poor. They can play great. They're trying to find themselves.
But they're at
Kendall.
Home, and the fans, they have great fans.
This is a tough day. I mean, this is not an easy day to be in a must-win situation. Iowa State fans, hold on. Like Danny said, you have to win. It's an awful situation to be in when you're watching a game at West Virginia.
Stan, it's been great to get a full 2 hours in, and you get to wallow in college football today. You mentioned to me off the air that you can't remember the last time that you were had a day off when Oklahoma and Texas were playing, so you get to enjoy that great game and many, many great college football games
today.
It's
a great day of college football, and next week we'll be back right here at 9 o'clock for another full 2 hour show. Two in a row, Danny.
As Kansas and Kansas State get back into action, Missouri plays tonight.